Hi, it is Gerard Christopher, Superboy from The Adventures of Superboy, and you're listening to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life.
Welcome, superfans. This is Comic Book Central. I'm your host, Joe Stuber. Thanks for joining me here in the lair, where this week, I relaxed after a whirlwind weekend in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Actually, it was Mars, PA, right outside of Pittsburgh, for the Monster Bash convention. I drove in on Friday, set up a bunch of interviews that day, watched some movies, bought some old comic books, and while I was there, I got a chance to meet up with some great, great folks. Fellow podcasters Scott and Tracy Morris from the Disney Indiana podcast, the B-Movie Man, Nick Brown, and the one, the only, Derek M. Cook, writer, producer, and host of Monster Kid Radio. Now, as some of you might know, I've joined Derek on his show on quite a few occasions to talk about the Abbott and Costello Meet the Monsters series of films. Now, while we were at Monster Bash, we got a chance to meet the boys themselves. Yes, we did. Abbott and Costello, as portrayed by comedians Joe Ziegler as Lou Costello and Bill Riley as Bud Abbott. I'm telling you, their shows were hilarious, and they even recreated many of the moments from Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. I've posted some of the pics over on the Comic Book Central Facebook page. You can see them at facebook.com/comicbookcentralnetwork. You can also check out the Ultimate Abbott and Costello Tribute Show on Facebook for a ton of pics of the boys at Monster Bash. You can check out Monster Kid Radio on Facebook as well. Now, I got a chance to interview both of them during the convention, and Derek and I recorded an interview with Joel Hodgson, creator and host of Mystery Science Theater 3000, one of my favorite shows of all time. Now, here's a programming note. July 11th on Comic Book Central, I am going to air a special episode, the Comic Book Central Monster Bash Crash. Now, on that episode, I'm going to include portions of the Joel Hodgson and the Abbott and Costello interviews, as well as my interviews with Beverly Washburn from Superman and the Mole Men and the original Star Trek series, Jay North and Jeannie Russell from the Dennis the Menace television series, and Laurie Mitchell from The Adventures of Superman. Now, you're going to hear from all of those folks July 11th on the Comic Book Central Monster Bash Crash. And you'll hear the full interviews with Joel Hodgson and the Ultimate Abbott and Costello Tribute Show over on MonsterKidRadio.net. Now, I'm going to announce the dates here on our Facebook page and here on the podcast. But for now, be sure to check out Monster Kid Radio as Derek begins our Monster Bash adventures. Truly had a blast meeting all of those super podcasters last weekend. Now, speaking of super folks, my guest in the lair today is pretty super in his own right. And he's faced more than his share of monsters on his own television series. He's one of the few actors to fly the colors and wear the Kryptonian S on his chest. Today, I am talking with the star of The Adventures of Superboy, Gerard Christopher. By the late 1980s, the Superman film franchise had just about run out of steam. But the character of Superman was still more powerful than a locomotive. Comic book artist and writer John Byrne had breathed new life into the Man of Steel. An animated series was soaring on Saturday mornings. And the producers of the Superman movies, Alexander and Ilya Salkind, were preparing to tell the tale of young Clark Kent. Only this time, Clark would wear the colors long before he appeared in Metropolis. This was the story of Superboy. The 50th anniversary of The Man of Steel marked the television debut of the Boy of Steel, played by actor John Hames Newton. Wait for it, folks. We're getting to Gerard. In season one of Superboy, all of the comic book elements were in place. Ma and Pa Kent, Lana Lang, Mr. Mixius Pitalik, the Silver Age origin of Lex Luthor, and in a nod to Superman creators Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster, Clark Kent attended the Siegel School of Journalism at Shuster University. Now, season two, however, brought on more changes than the comic book series Crisis on Infinite Earths. Actress Stacey Heiduk, who played Lana Lang, was the only holdover from season one. For whatever the reason, the Salkinds decided to recast the role of Clark Kent. And taking up the mantle of the last son of Krypton was Juilliard-trained actor Gerard Christopher. Gerard soared in the dual role of Clark Kent and Superboy. The show took off in the ratings, and it was renamed The Adventures of Superboy in the third season. For four seasons, the cast and crew of Superboy brought the comic book to life, kept the character flying, and paved the way for the ongoing adventures of Superman. Now, 76 years and counting since the character of Kal-El first appeared, my guest today portrayed the Man of Steel as the Boy of Steel on The Adventures of Superboy. He is Gerard Christopher. Gerard, welcome to the Comic Book Central Lair.
Hey, thanks so much. It's good to be here, and I'm getting a little old and rusty for being Superboy, but
You're still a boy. Okay. You're still a boy. Well, now with the DVDs out, you were eternally.
Still a boy at heart, right?
We're on a comic book podcast. We're all boys at heart, right? And hopefully, yep, your experience in the Comic Book Central Lair will be better than your time spent in the season 3 episode, The Lair. I promise you, no irradiated monsters will be attacking you today.
Good man. Glad to hear it.
A lot of folks might recognize you from spending so many years in the super spandex, but I'll bet readers of romance novels might recognize you from somewhere else. Am I correct in that?
Yeah, if they read them. Yeah.
So if we're frequenting a half-price books or something, and we see some old paperback novels there, romance novels, are we seeing you on those covers?
Sure. I did a whole bunch of them. I must have done 30 of them when I was a younger guy.
Oh, so did you ever read any of them? I mean, did you ever just like pick them up and go,
no,
what is it?
Not a one. Sorry to disappoint.
Just between us.
Not one.
So you started in modeling. How did you get those gigs? What other kind of modeling gigs did you get? I mean, just how soon did the work start coming in?
Right away, actually. I just met people that asked me to do it, and I started working and did great gigs right away. I worked for, you know, big people, Armani. I was in Cosmo many times. I was in lots and lots of ads. I did lots and lots of TV commercials.
How old are we talking here when you started doing these?
I was started at about 20 years old, 19, 20.
Okay.
And continued to do it sporadically as I started acting, and kept doing it like up into my 20s at my late 20s. It's kind of like a full-time gig. And it led me into acting and led me into commercials. And
had you planned on getting into that? Because you got a business degree?
I have a business degree from USC. Although a lot of my concentration was in the acting world, I studied, the finance of film. I studied things like screenwriting. But my degree is like a finance degree from USC, so that's kind of a different avenue.
Okay, so you got a business degree from USC. Then, like, what made you transition from saying, okay, I want to get into the business world, and, oh, I'm going to do modeling and commercials?
Well, you know what? I was, you know, like most actors, or like many actors, they have a business life too, you know. Big actors, small actors, they're invested, they have companies, they do all kinds of stuff, whether it's a production company or something completely outside that they just make money on. A lot of actors, believe it or not, are pretty multidimensional. And before I was an actor, I was dabbling in a lot of real estate stuff. I was buying things, I was selling things. So even when I had the show, I continued to do that, and I still do it now. And, getting back to some of the things I did before, I had some really, really fun modeling jobs. I mean, I've done modeling jobs overseas. I worked in Japan. I worked in Italy. I actually worked for two of, I think, the three U.S. manufacturers of mannequins, and there are mannequins out there that look like me. There's a company called Greniker that sells a mannequin called Gerard, and there's another company, and they make one called, I think, Jerry, which a lot of people used to call me too, and they're mannequins of me.
So the mannequins are actually named after you. You can pick up a specific
one of them is
Gerard
actually
mannequin.
Gerard. It's called Gerard Christopher, and that's by a company called Greniker. And then there are two of these companies are based out here in LA.
How close did these things get? I mean, are they pretty good likenesses?
No, they're very good likenesses. I mean, they're pretty much, you know, the kind of quality where if you saw them, like, in a wax museum, you'd say, like, wow. And I'll tell you, this came about kind of an interesting way. Recently, I decided, you know, I've got a bunch of Superman costumes, and I'm thinking, you know what? If they're not doing me or anybody else any good in my closet, why don't I put them at auction or see if people want to buy them. And people who kind of advised me on this said, you know, if you're going to sell them, you really have to display them right. You should probably put them on a mannequin. And I said, bingo. How many actors can find a mannequin of themselves? So,
one that's officially licensed and manufactured, too. I mean, yeah. It's not like you just went out and had one man-made.
No, it's very cool, and anybody can buy one. So I called Greniker and bought one of my mannequins, and it's actually, I'm just 6 feet tall, but it's about 6 feet two, and I'm going to be slapping my costumes on that thing and taking pictures of them one at a time that I'm going to be putting online. I'm going to be putting them on probably Facebook. I may put them on an auction website. They're going to be on the Superman homepage. They're going to be on various Superboy homepages. They're going to be on the Gerard Christopher Facebook page. So they're going to be out there, and people are going to know that if they want them, they can put a bid in or say, hey, I'll buy it for blah, blah, blah.
Oh,
and I'm
going
to see how that goes. If that doesn't go well, I'm just going to give them to an auction house and see if they do well with them. And last resort, if they don't do well, and by well, I mean if they don't sell for a price that I think is kind of fair, I'm going to probably just give them to a museum and let them display them.
So, Pete, so fans of the show, fans of Superboy can actually have you in their home, in the costume, staring at them all night long.
This is kind of pretty rare. I mean, that's kind of a weird thing that I just kind of thought about. Hey, you know what? If somebody really owned these things, they could actually have a man. I mean, it's pretty unusual.
There are people buying much stranger things on eBay than that.
But to the best of my knowledge, people that like have, let's just say you own a Christopher, you're lucky enough to own one of Christopher Reeve's suits. Where are you going to find Christopher Reeve's mannequin?
Right.
A lot of money to commission somebody to make like a wax thing or a custom made thing. And I imagine that would be many thousands of dollars. You can't find it. So I just thought it was kind of a cool thing if I end up giving them even to a museum. That's a very novel thing that I could tell the museum, hey, this kind of will look even better. Mannequins are available. I think it's just kind of neat.
So you can own a Gerard. You can own an actual Gerard.
In that sense, you can. And in that sense, I'm kind of glad that I have that odd kind of history of my work there, but that modeling even produced something like that. So.
Well, and anyway, you mentioned about these costumes. How many of these costumes did you have?
You know what? I probably have about three or four costumes that are like complete head to toe. I'm keeping one. One of them mounted in like a shadow box on my wall. But I have others, and I also have the Sovereign suit. If people that would really know my show knew that I played a character called the Sovereign. And that one's probably the most rare, and people are probably really going to be drawn to that one too.
We'll talk a little bit about that. Some good history on that character as well. But when was the last time you were in the suit?
Oh man, you'd have to ask my wife. No, I'm just kidding. No, you know what? Last time I was in the suit, I think I put one on just for the heck of it, maybe 10 years ago. Other than that, I haven't worn one.
Still fits, right?
In the show. Yep.
Ah, that's what we want to hear. See, you're eternal. You are going to be eternal. So, and you talk about these heroic roles, but I was reading on your website too. Did something happen early in your career, late '70s, when you were starting out in New York? I mean, did you actually confront the bad guys?
You know, I did. I don't want bad guys to seek me out now because I'm telling you this, but yeah, when I was in New York and you know, the time when I was modeling and I was studying acting, going to college, doing all this stuff, you know, what are you doing in New York? You're like on the subways all day long. You walk in the street, and I'm a New York guy. I grew up there, and I always had kind of a street sense for kind of knowing when something is going to go down. You can kind of, if you're from the city, you can often spot a troublemaker, and I was often either in the wrong or the right place, however you want to look at it, the wrong time or the right time, or I kind of loitered around because I could sense that something was going to go down, and I stopped a number of muggings, and I stopped enough of them that what were they called? That the mayor's commission or something like that, and the New York Citizens Committee gave me an award and 1 year. And I remember the mayor of New York telling me that I should not do it anymore. I shouldn't intervene like that because statistically, you know, it's not a healthy thing for a person to do that.
They're rewarding you and at the same time telling you, please stop doing this.
Well, you know, just, you know, being concerned about my safety and that, you know, hey, I'm not a cop. And at the time, I was not Superboy or Superman or anybody, so.
How many of these incidents are we talking about?
There were probably 9, but a couple of them were kind of, a couple of them got into the newspapers.
Okay, so this doesn't really happen to a typical person in New York. I mean, did you have kind of a death wish,
or
like you're just wrong place?
You're on the subway a lot. You're on the subway a lot. You're walking the streets.
Wow.
And you can spot the bad guys that are going to be trying to knock over like an old man waiting at a bus stop, or rip a chain off a woman's neck if she turns a corner or something like that. So, you know, it's not like I hung out waiting for these things to happen, but
you weren't like Bernie Getz or anything back in the day.
No. It's just that, you know what? And I said this, I remember saying something like this years ago to the newspaper when they interviewed me about this. You know, people just had a sense to look out for each other. None of that stuff would go down. And the good news is that in New York, it's so safe now. I'm just hoping that stuff doesn't happen much anymore. New York has made a major turnaround since I was like a teenager and in my 20s.
Yeah, it's Disneyland
much
now.
Much safer, thanks to Giuliani. But yeah. With this bozo that they have there now, this de Blasio, he's a total dimwit. And he's kind of turning everything around in a negative way. So I would say things in New York are probably not going to be as good as they used to be, and they're probably going to get a lot worse. I mean, this guy, if you can imagine a city like New York that, you know, had terrorist incidents, he's like abandoning the New York City terrorist squad that they police to put together. I mean, have a bozo is this guy. He's a knucklehead.
But just to reassure your fans, you're not going to suit up and start hitting the subways again.
No.
All right.
I've been grounded.
Oh, well, you know, you played a hero on TV and one in real life, so that's actually kind of cool. So you talked about segueing into acting, commercial spots, some memorable roles, Guns of Honor with Martin Sheen. Obviously, Tomboy, one of the classic movies of the 80s people know you from with Betsy Russell. What did you take away from Martin Sheen?
You know what? Martin and I actually didn't do scenes together in the movie. He kind of was working with different actors in the film. I worked a lot with Corbin Burnson and some other people. I thought he was great. We had a lot of fun. I mean, I did spend a lot of time with Martin. I remember going to sets with him, and we'd be in the car together for a couple of hours a day in the morning together, you know. But and we had a really interesting experience when we were in South Africa shooting. We both met Nelson Mandela together. We went to his office, and that was a real honor to do that.
Wow. So you've been just about everywhere.
Yeah, I traveled a lot.
And we mentioned Betsy Russell, working with her.
She was great. I ran into her a couple of years ago, and, you know, she's got a huge following still, and she has just gotten more beautiful with time. She's really something else.
Yeah, she's like one of these actresses that doesn't age.
Yeah, she looks great.
Yeah, so, and that segues us into Superboy, because you actually got to appear with her in another episode of Superboy. It was kind of like a Terminator kind of episode. That segues us, though, into Superboy with the acting career. And how did you feel about the character? What was your knowledge of Superman, Superboy? Did you have a background reading comic books growing up and watching the films and TV shows?
You know, good question. I mean, honestly, I didn't read comic books, but I was a real big fan of the Superman series that George Reeves did in the 50s and that was on again in the 60s and 70s. I mean, I used to love the show. I watched it all the time. And then when Christopher Reeve did his film, I mean, I loved it. I actually got the opportunity to meet Christopher Reeve a few times, even before I was an actor. I mean, like 1979, 1980, I met him socially at like parties in New York, and he was a big actor, big star. And I remember meeting him with his wife or girlfriend at the time, and seemed like a really, really nice guy. I met him again when he got his star on Hollywood Walk of Fame, and I was really honored to be there with him and with other people as well when he got that. So he was a terrific guy, and I would say I probably kind of styled my character more after what he did. I think he did the best thing.
Well, the show itself was sort of patterned after. I mean, it was produced by the Salkinds. We talked to Ilya Salkind early on in the run of Comic Book Central. But the show itself was, they produced the movies, they produced Supergirl, they were kind of branching out into this. Even the costume. It was basically Christopher Reeve's costume with some minor tweaks, I would imagine, right?
Right. Yeah. Ilya Salkind was a great guy. He hired me, and I remember, I think it was the first day of work, he asked me up to his office, and I remember I was dressed in the costume. And I was standing up in front of his desk, and he told me, he says, you know, the ratings last year were like 38 or 4. They were really bad. And he said, if the ratings don't go up, and if they don't go up right away, we're going to shut the show down, and like 127 people are going to be out of work. And he says, sorry to give you all that pressure, but consider yourself pressured. So,
and you're standing there in the tights.
Yeah, and I kind of laughed a little bit, and I said, no problem. You know, obviously it wasn't just me that made the show. There were a lot of new changes. A lot of people were gone. A few people were gone. Some new people came in. The writing crew was different. So it was a real big change to the show. And I would say a bigger change came even the next year when the show went a little darker. The stories got better. The costume changed. And the last 2 years, I think, were really pretty terrific.
Yeah, just for our listeners that might not be familiar with the show or just maybe catching up with it on DVD now, basically, John Hames Newton was cast as Superboy, Clark Kent, in season one, and then you came in and replaced him in season two. And again, as you mentioned, like wholesale changes. I think, Stacy Hydeck was sort of kept around as Lana
Lang? She was kind of the only one.
That's it. I mean, she survived the cut. And because of her amazing performance as Lana Lang. But are you impacted by that at all? Or are you kind of, well, I mean, obviously Ilya calling you in and saying it's all on your shoulders. But as far as the change, all the changes that are going on and coming in and replacing another actor, do you kind of get a sense of all that? Or are you just, you know what, here, square one, let's go from here?
It was kind of square one. It's a job. You know, it's not like I could look at it like you're replacing a guy because, you know, with all due respect to John, I've never met him. If a guy was fired...
To this day, you've not met him?
No. I mean, and, you know, obviously if they fired him, they didn't like what he was doing. So I can tell you, I have never seen one of his episodes, not one. I've never seen 2 minutes of any show that he's been in. And that was a choice that I made. Obviously, I don't want to see what he did. And the worst case, I wouldn't want to emulate anything that wasn't, a winning scenario for the show. I hopefully brought a little bit of my own sense of the character, and I try to bring whatever I thought was the best of what I knew of the character and what I felt about him. And a lot of that was, kind of continuing what Christopher Reeve did and then just slapping my personality on him a little bit more and making my own. But I would say in a situation like that, you have to start from scratch and say, hey, this is like a new job for me, just like it would be for anybody else. And you can't look backwards. You got to look ahead and just and go with it. And that's exactly what Ilya Salkind wanted me to do.
What was your relationship with the Salkinds?
Well, Ilya was the only one involved. His father was not involved in the show, to my knowledge. And I certainly never met him. And I had a really good relationship with Ilya. I love the guy. I think he was, I think he had a lot of vision hiring me. how could I not like the guy he hired me, really, you know?
Yeah.
But he's a terrific guy, nice guy, very easy to work with. And hey, you know, I owe him a big debt. He hired me for a terrific job.
You hear these horror stories from other actors, and it's just you kind of wonder, because you're coming at it from a completely different perspective than the end of the 70s when the movies were and the big budgets and all these crazy things. You're coming at it from a TV angle. So you're kind of, I guess, your relationship wasn't necessarily like a lot of other actors that had with him.
You know what, though? In defense of Ilya, I suspect that some of the negative press or some of the negative words that people have about him or his last name maybe has a little bit more to do with his dad than with Ilya. Hmm. I think Ilya is a straight shooter. I even know, and it's public knowledge, that I know he had a lot of problems with his dad. So, I think Ilya was a different person than his dad. And, he was totally square with me, and that's what I liked.
And he seems to, and even in my conversation with him, he seems to have such a passion for this character of Clark Kent, Superman, Kal-El, whichever, you know, form he's taking. He seems to have such a passion, and I think that came out in the series as well.
Oh, I agree. I mean, he loved the show. I mean, he was down at the set all the time. He used to talk to me all the time about it, and, you know, if he thought I wasn't doing something right, he'd tell me, but he was always very kind with platitudes when he thought I was doing something just right. So, I mean, he definitely had his finger in it. You could tell, like you said, he really loved the show and loved the character. And he was invested in it. I mean, of all the Superman movies done, I mean, up until that time, I think there was only one that they had done. I think at one point somebody else took it and it was done by the Sabans or something once, and they did something that was not too good. Mm-hmm. But, you know, for the time, they did a really good job with the budgets they had and with the state of the art in terms of technology at the time. They did a really good job. I mean, these days with CG, the state of like computer animation and things they can do, I mean, the sky's the limit. You can say, hey, Superman, you can write, Superman's going to do anything, and they can make it happen because of computers. I mean, it's a whole different world now. But I would say dealing with the state of the technology back then and the budget, I think that this all has did a great job.
Oh, yeah. There's a whole section of Superman 3 where they wanted to do all these things, didn't have the money for it, so they just had Richard Pryor explain it in some expositional dialogue. So it's like, okay.
Exactly.
Guess you could talk about it. But, yeah, and you mentioned crossing paths with Christopher Reeve. Any input from him on any level during the production of the show? Did you get any?
You know, I wish. No, but he didn't. He was just always very kind and just polite and saying hi. And But no. He didn't say, hey, you know, maybe you ought to do Clark a little different. He didn't say anything, no.
No, I thought it was interesting, too, because when he took the role of Superman, I think he was in his mid-20s, like around 25 or so. When you started, how old were you?
I think I was the oldest person to ever play Superman.
I think you're correct.
and I was playing Superboy.
Yes.
This is what's interesting.
You were like 30 years old, like 29, 30.
Superboy, I was 30 years old, yep. And I was playing, I think, 20. And then he was in Schuster, I think, for 2 seasons, maybe.
Yeah.
So maybe I was playing 20 and 21, or maybe I was started when he was about 21 to 22. And I finished the show when I was like 32. Something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at this thing, and it's like you basically have Christopher Reeve's costume. You basically are taking an extension of the movies, and you're older than Christopher Reeve was when he was playing him. So you're kind of playing Superman at this point.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I really don't care for Warner Brothers too much, and I'll be really honest. Our show is doing really well, and Warner Brothers was able to pull the plug on us because they had the right to approve our scripts. And at the end of our show, the very last show that we did was the 100th episode of Superboy, they just stopped approving our scripts, which put us out of business. And we were doing well, and we would have gone on, and we would have done more of them. So they pulled the plug, said that we couldn't do any more, and then they cast for Lois and Clark. You may have heard, I read for Lois and Clark, and I was in the room with all these boneheaded producers.
Yeah, in our interview with Deborah Joy Levine, I asked her about this. I said, do you ever recall meeting Gerard Christopher? I don't think – she said they did a lot of precasting, so I don't think you made it to her stage. But so you were in the room before it even got to her.
Well, do you know what? I have a feeling – who is this lady? Was she a producer?
She was the showrunner.
The showrunner?
Yeah. Now, she said that they – when I asked her about this, she said she didn't recall – but they had done some precasting before it got to her. So I'm thinking it's kind of like the American Idol thing where they...
I was in the room with like 10 people. And it was like they were going to start production in like a couple of weeks. They were like really down for finding the guy.
Yeah.
So I asked the casting director, I forgot her name at the time. I said, you know, you mind doing me a favor? I said, you know, if they don't ask, you know, about me, just don't give them history on me. I just want to go in there just like cold, like because I just figured this is going to go one of two ways. The producers, if they know who I am and know that I played Superboy, they're either going to love it or like it. And you don't know how they're going to go with that. They could say, hey, you know what? The guy just got off a show, was number 10 in syndication. He's got like 3 million households that are watching him already. The last episode of his show, he became Superman. He graduated kind of from Superboy.
Yeah, rites of passage.
Why don't we just continue on this and build on it? And, hey, if he works out for the show, that's great. Or they're going to say, you know what, this guy's done this show already. I don't want any identification with the other show. There's a new thing. So I was taking a gamble with that. So I asked her, I said, you know, if you don't mind, just let's kind of keep it quiet. If these people don't recognize me when I walk in the door, just, you know, let's keep it quiet. So she did, and I thought that was kind of interesting that she did. But and I read, and they loved my reading. And the guy, and I don't remember his name, I kind of remember him, had a little bit of a beard or whatever. And he just went nuts when I read. He loved my reading. He jumped up out of his seat, and he kind of pumped his fist, and he said to everybody, that's it, we found him, we found our guy. And they kept me there, and we're talking, and we're talking, and we're talking. And then at some point in the conversation, he picks up my picture and my resume from the table, and he says, you know, let me take a look at this. And he starts looking, and he scrolls down. He goes, the Adventures of Superboy. He goes, you've done this. And he takes my picture, and he throws it on the table. He just flings it like he's really upset. And that was the end of the interview. Then they kind of politely escorted me to the door. So that's kind of how it went down. And you know what?
That's Hollywood.
He can do whatever he wants.
That's Hollywood. Do you remember the scene that you read?
I didn't do it again. I don't.
Was it was it with like Lois stand-in, or was it just kind of like Clark on his own?
I think the casting director probably read for Lois.
Okay.
That's typically what they do.
What could have been? I mean, yeah, and that's – well, you talk about that. So, let's actually get into the series itself, because you talk about it, and there is definitely a progression as we go through the series. You came in season two through four. There's definitely a progression as we go through of you graduating, if you will, to Superman. When you start out – and you, it's interesting. One of the producers for Arrow recently said that each season they want a tone, a change in tone, so that when you watch a season of Arrow that you know which season you're watching. It's not just the haircuts. It's not what they're wearing. It's the tone. I would think that that could be applied to Superboy as well. It's like each season had its own tone. Am I correct in that?
You know, you might be. I would say that, you know, it's just my opinion. I think that the reasons for us doing that are different. It was because we were sensitive to not just doing it for the sake of doing it so that each season looks good. It was, you know, again, Elias Salkin and the people that were involved and everybody, you know, they wanted this show to thrive. And for it to thrive, it had to, we had to step up our game. The show did have a pretty low budget, and, you know, over time, we did some pretty great things with a low budget. But the writing got better. The character got better. He grew up more. You know, I didn't read Superboy comics, but some of them are pretty campy and pretty goofy. But as we went on with it, they got more into, like, the Superman stories that were a little bit more interesting. And when I wrote a couple of episodes, I remember talking to the other producers, because I also got to be one of the producers the last couple of years. You know, I said, look, let's look at it this way. Imagine Superboy really exists in this world today. Is Superboy going to be messing around with Mixes Pitalik, or is he going to be intervening on a street corner when a car goes through and almost hits somebody? Or is he going to be looked at as a national asset, and is this guy going to be involved on the world stage? And I thought, this guy's going to be on the world stage. So when I wrote a script like Wish for Armageddon, he was being manipulated to kind of potentially terminate the whole world. And that's kind of the way that I wanted to see the character. I just said, you know what, if this guy exists, he's not going to be playing small ball. He's going to be really involved in the biggest stuff there is. The government would want to use him. They'd see him as something that's important. They'd look at him as like their stealth weapon or something, or, you know, their weapon of last resort, or their savior of last resort. So I think that was kind of what I try to do with the show.
And tying it back to Christopher Reeve, that's the Christopher Reeve theory in Superman 4, was wouldn't he just rid the Earth of nuclear weapons? And so that's where they went down. That's when he wrote that screenplay of that. So there's an aspect of that. Yeah, is he going to battle comic book villains, or is he going to do something to change world events? So yeah, that certainly, again, ties back in with the Christopher Reeve movies. Well, we talked about that then, that tone change. Season 2, full-on comic book. I mean, yeah, you mentioned some of those, Mr. Mixes Pitalik. Obviously, you've got the characters coming in from the comics, Metallo, Bizarro, things like that. And then season three, as you mentioned, it takes a dark turn, but boy, you were Mulder and Scully before the X-Files, weren't you?
Yeah, it kind of was.
What was the office?
The Bureau of for Extra Normal Matters.
Yes. You're the X-Files.
And
Lana Lang is the X-Files. And she's got red hair.
Exactly.
Well, I mean,
we got there first.
So that I read an interview that you had before where you sort of like were unhappy. It was right after you had shot season two. It seemed like you were kind of unhappy with how things were going, and then all of a sudden the next year you were okay with how things were going. What all changed for you personally and professionally during those seasons that you're like, okay, now we're hitting the groove with this?
You know what? I don't remember exactly what you're talking about, but I remember it might have been after season one where, you know, for whatever reasons, they just had a lot of constraints, budget constraints and this and that. And when I was doing the show, I worked kind of for peanuts the first season, and the numbers went way, way up. And I asked for more money, and they kind of threatened to fire me. And there was kind of a more of an interesting story where...
Yeah, that's what I'm referring to.
Stacey Heidick allegedly got in the mix, and she asked them for more money. And she said, well, why don't you fire Gerard and get me more money? And that was kind of a silly thing, and I don't think they ever took her seriously. But I think, you know, when you're acting and you're separating yourself from the production, you're saying, hey, Cole, this is a business, and you have your agents doing your dirty work for you. Your agents, you know, they advocate for you. So they're going to say, hey, look, you know, the guy worked for Peanuts the first season. He did it. He was glad to do it. But he really stepped up to the plate. The show is really doing well now. So you should pay him like a normal actor. And then they ask for normal pay. So obviously when you don't want to pay somebody the normal pay, you kind of do what you want to do. And they actually put out in the breakdown, if people know what that is, that they were looking for a new actor to replace me, which is would have been kind of ridiculous, because how do you sell a show in syndication when it's got three actors playing the lead character?
Yeah, one change of lead actor is a tough sell.
Twice would be bad enough. Yeah, I mean, one makes it difficult enough. But three? I don't think that would have flown, you know, just I don't think they could sell the show.
Well, thank goodness for us, cooler heads prevailed, and you stay.
That's the good news. So what were the most? I came back. I was happy to be back.
What were the most challenging aspects of filming the series for you?
I mean, personally, physically, we were shooting in Florida. The suits are, you know, you might have heard the legendary stories of George Reeves' suit being really uncomfortable and itchy. His was wool. Mine was thick spandex like Christopher Reeves, and the cape is wool. It was extremely uncomfortable shooting in Florida where it's very hot and humid. So, I mean, on a personal level, that was very tough. I wasn't allowed to sweat. You can't slow down, you know, watching my shows and ever see underarm sweat or anything like that. It just didn't happen.
What's the secret of never letting them see you sweat?
Well, psychologically, I just used to try to stay cool. I mean, literally, I would try to stand there and not sweat.
You had the superpower of non-perspiration?
Well, kind of. It's like... I literally try to control my body to not sweat, to stay cool. They had fans everywhere so that if I was standing somewhere that we could keep me cool. But I was on a physical level, that was the hard thing about the show. There were a ton of really fun aspects of doing the show, like flying. Outdoor flying was really fun. Flying indoors wasn't as much fun because you're static. But flying outdoors was a blast. You know, I got to, like, jump off the ground and maybe end up on the top of the building, and I got to do fun things like that. So it was a really fun thing. I enjoyed towards the end. You know, you try to save time and money towards the end of a production, and the stunt guys will always tell the production, oh, you know, your actor can't do this because he might get hurt, when in reality, you know, you can do it and you're not going to get hurt, and you're going to save the production a lot of time and money. So that's kind of the direction they started going. So I started doing more and more and more of my stunts, which actors tend to do because they know they can do them. And it makes it very easy. They don't have to have, like, an awkward cut like they sometimes do where everybody in the world watching it knows, hey, that's not the actor, and look what they just did. They just cut to the actor, and there he is. He's just getting up now after the other guy fell down. So you're able to do things in a more seamless way, and the actor doesn't have to cover his face. So we started doing things like that more, which was a lot of fun too. So, you know, you just kind of grow with your character and it becomes more part of you and you get more facile at doing it. It all becomes easier and hopefully it's fun, and it was a lot of fun. How could it not be? You know?
We mentioned Stacey Heideck. You shared a lot of screen time with her, and your characters really went through some transitions over the course of the series. How did you both approach these transitions as actors? What kind of conversations did you have in order to say, okay, here's where we're going with these characters now?
Well, you know, I don't think we ever did that. You had that conversation. It's just that, you know, when the scripts are written a certain way, you interpret them and you just bring it on, and that's what you do. I would say, you know, if you look at the shows too, talking about transitions, some of the hair was pretty funny. Her hair.
It's a microcosm of the late 80s. Yes, it is.
Exactly. A little poofy sometimes. And
shoulder
I remember
pads.
David Tinkham, who was my hair and makeup guy, once he put a little bit too much of whatever he was putting in my brew that he put in my hair, because they had to dye my hair blue and black. And he also went a little haywire one day and put like curls in it that were like not right. And I think Ilya got a little bent out of shape for that one. But, you know, there were a lot of fun things going on like that. That's the fun stuff that I remember, all that kind of crazy stuff.
So they actually did put some blue in your hair?
Yeah, they used to put like four parts black, one part like a dark, dark blue in the dye.
See, this always kind of drove me nuts in the comic books, because when they're coloring the hair in the comic books, they're always like coloring giant sections blue. And you're like, oh, okay. But they, in real life, they put blue in your hair, so...
They did.
It is a comic book brought to life.
If you looked at my hair, it did have like a bluish black kind of tint to it. It was
just
subtle.
Like the comic
it
book.
Very subtle.
Oh, that's crazy. Let's talk about some of the guest stars. Man, who's who of Hollywood again? One of these things, you know, the great Howard Sherman as Lex Luthor. Is it now? Mm-hmm. What was the deal with the name change? Sherman Howard, Howard Sherman.
You know what? I don't know. You're gonna have to ask him. I really don't know.
He played the great Lex Luthor.
It might have been something to do with, you know, maybe there was another actor out there that with that name, and he just figured, I'm going to flip it around.
Yeah, a lot of scenes
with
him.
Could have been as simple as
that. How fun was that to work with him?
No, he was great. I mean, I couldn't imagine doing that with anybody else. We just had a lot of fun. And, you know, playing a bad guy is a ton of fun. And I got to experience his character in one of the episodes we did called Body Swap, where I got to be Lex Luthor in my body, and he played me. And you could tell him playing me, you just look at him as an actor, and he was not having as much fun anymore. I mean, it's really fun to be a bad guy. And when you're a bad guy with superpowers, then you're really having a great day.
Oh, that's one thing friend of the show, Jay Underwood, had talked about. We interviewed him about playing the Human Torch, but he was also the Kryptonite Kid. And he said he had a field day with that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it looked like he really, you know, got into wearing his costume and had a lot of fun with it.
Yeah, you guys got to chew so much scenery in these things. And you had the great Gilbert Gottfried as Nick Knack, sort of a precursor of the Toy Man.
He was a riot. He was a funny guy.
Michael J. Pollard, even Aaron Gray. Was this in one of the episodes you wrote, Cat and Mouse?
I think Cat and Mouse or something, yeah.
Yeah, it was like a clip show. We talked to her about that, and she mentioned. And then also James Bond. And the Bond girl, Britt Eklund, George Lazenby, as
right.
kind of your parents.
My phony kind of parents.
If anybody
my
hasn't seen
parents.
It, yeah, spoiler alert, it's not them.
But I would say George Lazenby was one of the funniest guys I ever met. He just kept us cracking up, like, the whole time on the set. It was really hard to work with him because he was so funny. And we all really enjoyed him. He's such a good guy.
Any cool Bond stories that came out of that?
No, but a lot of stuff that I couldn't talk about on
a family-friendly podcast,
or radio, or anything. Yeah, definitely.
We'll have to get those off air then. The great Ron Ely, Tarzan, as an older version of you.
I really liked Ron Ely. He gave me a lot of insight. You know, when I was working, he played. You know, he really was like a father figure. A built, big, tall guy. He must be about 6'4". And I remember him being kind of like the coolest actor that I worked with on the show, where I just felt like he was he kind of was a guy who's been there, done that, and in the nicest way possible would give you like advice, not about acting, but about the life of an actor. And, you know, because he did something where, you know, he played Tarzan and for a number of years. He told me he didn't work again and all this other stuff. So he was trying to kind of warn me about, you know, what can happen to you when you play a character like this. And, you know, I appreciated it. And in a lot of ways, he was correct.
What advice did he give you to sort of deal with this in the years following?
You know, he just kind of said, you know, you got to lay low after you do this. It's, you know, a lot of people are going to maybe not like that you do it, or they might find it hard to cast you again after this or whatever. But, you know, his head was, you could tell his heart was in the right place telling me what he told me. And, you know, we also talked about a lot of other things, and I just, I appreciate everything he said because I knew that he came from a place of knowledge and he was like a real concerned guy. Really terrific guy.
Favorite episodes? You mentioned one earlier, The Road's Not Taken, a two-parter. You mentioned the character Sovereign.
Oh, yeah.
Sovereign.
I mean, that was just one of them where I got to be a bad guy. And, I mean, there is you know, no more fun than being the bad guy. The bad guy, you know, when you are a guest star on a TV show like these, you're typically a bad guy. And those are the people that have all the fun, typically. They come in, they get to be as bad as can be, and they create havoc, and then they're gone. They're off the show for a while because they're a guest star. And they have all the good lines. They have all the good fun. When you're the straight guy and have to be the good guy, it's, you know, it's usually not as much fun. It's just not. So when I got to be a character like the Sovereign, who was just bad to the bone, he's like a kind of a Hitler character on the Earth with superpowers, it was... a really interesting thing to do. I mean, he wasn't exactly a Hitler, but he was a dictator, a really mean, evil dictator. And there's just a little bit of fun, you know, about having the power to be a dictator and, you know, pretending that you're doing that. And it just makes acting a little bit more fun when you can go to that place where you're a bad guy.
And this is like an alternate version of Superboy. And this is you.
Exactly. It was supposed to be on a different world or in a different... I think in that episode it was a different dimension.
Yeah. Where,
you know, we go through not a time portal, but an interdimensional portal of some kind. And we're on a place that is the Earth, but in a different dimension. So it was really interesting. They got into kind of a lot of interesting stories. And I heard, because like I said, I never saw Lois and Clark either. I heard that Lois and Clark ripped off a lot of our shows, too, and that just tells me that I guess our shows were good.
Well, and
I heard that they ripped off a lot of the story themes.
Well, when you look at that, I mean, you've got some of these themes playing through, and even in this particular episode, Mark Miller's incredible three-part miniseries, Red Sun, that came out in 2003, that's kind of a similar take on the whole if Superman had crash-landed in the Soviet Union. How would things have turned out? So it's kind of like, even the costume is very similar to Sovereign. So we got kind of that. It's almost like that, almost like Nietzsche's Ubermensch.
Well, you know what? I'm going to have to put that on my Netflix list because I've never seen that. It's called Red Sun.
This was a miniseries, a three-part comic book miniseries that Mark Miller had written. And it's brilliant.
Oh, they're comic books. They're
comic book.
Books.
Yep. It's a brilliant series. And, you know, I... could easily have been inspired by it. He mentions that the original idea came from him from Superman issue 300, where Superman kind of crash lands, and they in these waters that are sort of the U.S. and Russia, and U.S. gets to him first. Your version was kind of like, oh, here's what happens if he went a little dark. So, yeah, just amazing. And yeah, so when you think about it, as an actor, how do you sort of take on both roles like that? Where do you go to find that sort of darker character and even the darker themes of seasons 3 and 4?
A darker character. I mean, I think anybody can find it in them to kind of pretend and to have fun. I mean, part of acting is play. And I mean, there's certainly a lot of kind of evil in the natural world and people that are pretty horrible and people that you can emulate, like historically. So, I mean, but in a more playful sense, I mean, you look at the relationship between Superboy and Lex Luthor, for instance. I mean, that was one that was pretty easy because they have a relationship. It was very easy to kind of make that relationship, like, personal so that when I become a bad guy like him, I'm kind of, in a way, aping what he did a little bit, kind of copying a little bit. But for other characters, I mean, it's... you just let your mind go. There's a lot of bad that can happen in the world, and there's a lot of bad that happens in the world. And in that sense, it was kind of fun.
You shot the series at Universal in Florida, so obviously the public's kind of like right there. What was the reaction you got from fans when you were shooting this, and especially from kids, when they're just like, oh, there's Superboy?
Oh, it was huge. I mean, it was huge. I used to have so much fun when we would be shooting, and I get to interact with kids. I mean, there were gobs of kids all over the place, and I used to look to sign autographs for them, and you look at the faces of these kids when they see you, and they just like, whoa, they couldn't believe it. Here's like a full life-size person, like in this suit that it's right in front of me, and you take a picture with them or whatever, and you just felt like, my God, it just, you could see that it meant so much to these kids, and it was really, it was just fun. I mean, I was having more fun than they were.
It wasn't work.
It was fun. I mean, a lot of it was pure fun, just pure fun.
No, it's always good to hear.
I mean,
sometimes
outside
you hear
of
these
wearing
horror
the costume
stories.
Yeah, outside of wearing a costume when it's 95 degrees out and 99% humidity, I would say it was 99% fun. It was just a lot of fun, and that's why I'm very appreciative to Ilya Salkin for hiring me. I had a great time, and it was something I won't forget.
And now a whole new generation gets to see these episodes. Finally, after all these years, what's the deal on these DVDs? They finally were released, but what a holdup for all these years.
You know what? I don't know how it happened legally. I know that there were issues with, like, Ilya owned some part of the show and Warner Brothers owned some part of the show, but they got them out there, and, you know, I don't know how great they look or how well engineered or mastered they are or anything like that, or, you know, how much money they put into them. I think they really put very minimal money into them, but it's nice that they're out there. People can finally watch them. They can also download them. I know I bought them on a download from iTunes. And I'm so happy they're out there. I just hope people watch them. It'd be nice if, like, next generation of young guys and girls grab the show and enjoy it, you know?
Well, and you sort of get to interact with these fans now at comic conventions. I saw, was it just last year you finally got a chance to reunite with Stacy Hyduk after all these years?
Oh, yeah, I think it was 2 years ago we did a little autograph signing together, which was fun. And, you know, I really don't have anything else planned with her. I actually should try to get a hold of her and try to plan something together. It would be fun.
Well, yeah, that'd be, you know, can we expect to see some more of these things?
You know, I don't do a lot of them. I'm supposed to do one here in L.A., I think, in August, and I'm doing another one in, I think, Tampa in July. And that's so far, I think, what I've got lined up. I don't have much else lined up. I mean, I would actually like to do them. I enjoy them. And it's just a question of, you know, having an agent that does this and who can get you signed up on time, because they like to book these things, you know, in advance and things like that. So it's just a question of, like, logistically making it happen. So
how about your latest projects? What do you got going on now? What are you up to? And how can fans find out more about you?
Well, you know what? I'm really kind of not pursuing acting at the moment. I just am not. Somebody knocks on my door and says, hey, Gerard, you want a job? I might take it if it's something that sounds fun. But I'm not actively trying to. The business is crazy. I got older. The people casting you get younger. And I just, you know, I don't see the business being that warm and fuzzy anymore. It's just, you know, it's just not that much fun for me anymore. But like I said, that could change overnight if somebody came to me like Ilya did and said, hey, you want to do this job? So I'm open to it, but I'm not pursuing it. I have other things that I do in life, other business things that I do, which I'm really happy with.
Yeah, you mentioned real estate, didn't you?
Yeah. I do all kinds of business, and I find that enjoyable. And, you know, like I said, I'm not averse to some business. I'm just not going to chase it. It's just, in some ways it's a job for crazy people, and you got to be a little crazy to do it sometimes. And you also, you know, you look at Michael Jordan, he left at the top of the game, and there's, you know, sometimes people don't know when to leave the business. And it's kind of sad for me to look at an actor who stays in the business and you see them decline in the business, where I felt like I just wanted to walk out of it and, you know, and enjoy that I'm, you know, walking from it. So,
well, how can fans find out a little bit more about you? You got a website, Facebook, Twitter?
Well, you know, there is a website. It's not been, updated for quite a long time. There is a Facebook page, Gerard Christopher, that will be updated, and that's actually where these pictures of the suits are going to be. The suits that are going to be auctioned off and stuff, they're going to be on Gerard Christopher on Facebook and on a couple of other websites. So I would say that's where people can start to look, because that'll probably be updated soon, the Facebook page.
Okay. And now that the shows are out on DVD, are you going to go back and watch season one finally and get caught up on your Superboy fix?
Well, you know what? Every once in a while, because I have them on my Apple TV or whatever it is, every once in a while I go in there and I take a look at one of them. And if I get like a crazy fan or somebody that knows me and they said, hey, I want to watch one of your shows, every once in a while, I'll just, say pick your favorite and I'll watch it with them. But, every once in a while.
I knew you were watching season one somewhere in there. After these years, you can go back and take a look at him. Well, how do you see the character? Not only Superman, but Superboy, the whole legacy. When you look at this, every actor has their sort of perspective on it. What's Gerard Christopher's perspective on this particular character?
Well, I think he's like purely American, at least in the terms of what America used to stand for. I mean, being powerful, being, being strong. I think he's the consummate immigrant. He's kind of an illegal immigrant who became American and really bit the apple and really loves America, loves what America stands for. And, you feel sorry for him, too. I mean, he doesn't have parents. He's an orphan. There's nobody else like him. He's trying to do the right thing. He's always conflicted. And it makes you have compassion for him. And, unless you're kind of just looking at him very, in a very single-minded way, there's a lot of dimensions to his character that, make him a really more interesting character than most people see, in their first blush, I mean, there's a lot going on in him. And, every once in a while as an actor, you can kind of touch that stuff and make it a little more interesting.
Absolutely. Well, we mentioned the character of Superman has been around for 75 years plus, and the Superboy legacy has been a big part of that history. So all of us fans appreciate the way you brought the character to life. Gerard Christopher, thank you so much for joining me here on Comic Book Central today.
Oh, thanks so much. Thanks so much for having me. It was really great speaking with you, and I hope people enjoy the interview, and I gave a little more insight, and take a look at my costumes online. I think you might find it interesting. See if the mannequin looks like me.
Look forward to having you in our homes. Hey, thanks so much.
Hey, thank you.
My thanks again to Gerard Christopher for taking some time to chat with me in the lair. To find out more about Gerard, be sure to check out his website, gerardchristopher.webs.com. And you can catch up with him on Facebook at facebook.com/GerardSuperboyChristopher. Now, to learn more about the Superboy television series, you're going to want to visit the Superboy homepage, your one-stop shop for all things Superboy. Sam Rizzo has done a marvelous job keeping the legacy of the Superboy television series alive and well, and he's been a big help on this particular episode. Thanks again, Sam, for all the help. The website is superboyhomepage.com. The Facebook page is facebook.com/superboyhomepage. And you can follow the Boy of Steel on Twitter at superboyhomepge. And of course, you can now purchase all 4 seasons of the show on DVD at wbshop.com. I'm going to put all those links up on the comicbookcentral.net show notes. Now, if you'd like to meet Gerard in person, he's going to be appearing at the Hollywood Show in Los Angeles, California on July 19th and the Tampa Bay Comic Convention in Tampa Bay, Florida from August 1st through the 3rd. As I mentioned earlier in the show, there are a lot of fantastic guests coming up on Comic Book Central. You'll find all of the episodes online at comicbookcentral.net. And if you subscribe to the show in iTunes, you're not going to miss any episodes at all. There's more information coming on the Monster Bash Crash here on Comic Book Central and Monster Kid Radio. And if you enjoyed today's super show, another super guest has made a reservation here in the lair. Yes, the Maid of Might herself, Helen Slater, is going to be here. We're going to be celebrating the 30th anniversary of the film
Supergirl. I'm going to have more information on that show in the weeks ahead. In the meantime, if you haven't already, you can check out my interview with Helen's Supergirl co-star, Mark Jimmy Olsen McClure, on episode 28 of Comic Book Central. Huge thanks to all who are embracing Comic Book Central. Those of you who posted a review in iTunes, who are sharing the show with friends and family on Twitter and Facebook, I cannot begin to tell you how much that means to me. I am truly grateful. You too can hashtag share the lair on Facebook and Twitter, facebook.com/comicbookcentralnetwork, and Twitter at comicbookctrl. And I want to know what you think of the show and these super cool guests and the super scary guests that are going to be coming up and hanging out in the lair. Send me an email, joe@comicbookcentral.net. Well, kiddies, we are out of time today, but be sure to check back in just 7 short days, because next week on Comic Book Central, it's one thing to bring a comic book character to life on film or television, but a live-action performance on stage? Oh, how about an entire universe of comic book characters all at once? Marvel Universe Live is about to take the world by storm. Spider-Man, Iron Man, Wolverine, Captain America and the Falcon, Thor, the Incredible Hulk, Black Cat, Black Widow, Loki, the Green Goblin, and many, many more. They are set to take the stage and come to life before your very eyes, and one woman is going to be in charge of them all. Do not miss my conversation with superstar director Shanda Sawyer next week. Until then, have a tremendous week. Keep reading those comics, and thanks for joining me here in the lair, Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. This podcast is intended for entertainment and education purposes only. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Comic Book Central and is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivations 3.0 Unported License. All of the content and names are registered trademarks and copyrights of their respective holders.
Okay, so let's get to it.